In 1929, a Norwegian professor from the University of Oslo arrived in the Isle of Man. Apart from preliminary tests, Carl Mastrander never passed a university exam, but he was a specialist in Celtic languages. This docudrama, written by Norwegian student Rundi Lundi, includes extracts from Mastrander's diary, read by Dr. Brian Stoll.
June 12th to Man, the sea flat calm. Arrived Douglas approximately 2:30 p.m. Booked into British Hotel near the old marketplace. A Danish ship was, so to say, anchored outside the windows. It had brought timber from Riga and was now taking on ballast. 13th of June. Paid a visit to the Manx Museum, a red brick building originally built as a hospital. Met PMC Kermode, 56 years old, a pleasant and talkative old gentleman, who introduced me to the librarian, Mr. William Cubbon, and to John Joseph Neame, the author of the excellent work on Manx place names. Both were particularly nice people. That afternoon, Neame and myself had a pleasant trip to Braddon Church, where several runic crosses are placed. Neen's information about the condition under which scholarly work is carried out here was particularly sad to hear.
Mastrander was born in Norway in 1883. In 1906, he was supposed to join the Norwegian Olympic team of pole vaulting, but he received a scholarship for Irish studies and preferred that to a possible Olympic victory. He went to Blasket in 1907 to learn modern Irish, and the islanders called him the Viking, apparently with affection. From the first day he set foot on the island, he worked on sea and land with them, stayed in the king's house and became a pupil under Thomas Ugrahin. The saga says that the professor frightened and amused the islanders by taking an oar of a nevog, a coracle, and pole-vaulted over houses and huts during moonlit nights. Carl Mastrander came to the Isle of Man to save the traces of the Manx language before it died out. He started to search for native speakers.
My first victim was a 60-year-old man from the farm Cueg, 1 or 2 kilometres from Douglas. The old people in those parts didn't speak Manx any longer, he said. His old parents spoke a little Manx, but they preferred English and refused to have their children speak Manx. His grandparents, however, spoke mainly Manx and spoke English with an accent. A man in Beaconsfield, not on the map but not too far from Cueg, about 55 years old, said one didn't hear Manx any longer. His own father and mother spoke only English. Apart from that, he was rather vague and not very precise in his statements. Rather a lot of rain on the east side, and I was rather wet when I arrived in Castletown, where I booked a room in the Union Hotel. Later on that evening, I had a pleasant conversation with the older and younger people from Castletown and the surrounding area. However, none of them spoke Manx. There was one exception, however, in a relatively young man, whom I estimated to be in his 40s. He'd learned a little Manx, typically enough, from his grandfather. When I took a random sample and asked him what was "It's a cold day" in Manx, his reply was quite correct. I amused myself by throwing darts with a very young man from the place. He won at last after approximately 60 throws, and afterwards I had to buy him a glass of beer, a cheap and reasonable hotel.
Mastrander discovered that few people spoke Manx, and those who did were reluctant to admit that they did. Was he prepared for the fact that people were ashamed to speak their mother tongue? In any case, the fact that it was so hard to find people who knew Manx and who were willing to speak it made his task a difficult one.
Half a kilometre west of Balasala, at Cross Four Ways, I've marked this in the Manx guide, but it's not on the Ordnance Survey map. A woman of 40 declared that no one in the neighbourhood could speak Manx, but further on, in the direction of Grenaby, one could find lots of them. This was an exaggeration, however. A little north from here, and before the side road turns off for Grenaby from the main road to Peel, I had a chat with a man in his 50s. He was born in Balasala. The father understood Manx, but ordinarily spoke English. His grandfather, however, preferred to speak Manx, but understood English nevertheless. As good speakers, he mentioned two old women, Mrs. Wade and Mrs. Johnson, both about 90 years old and living quite near. In addition, he mentioned the tailor Taggart in Grenaby, and a shoemaker in the same place, William Preston, who was over 80. He thought it was useless to go to him, as he would probably slam the door in my face if I called on him. From this man, I also heard the first bit of Manx. He was familiar with some ordinary greetings and some other phrases, and had often heard about Joch and Doris, the drink at the door. In Irish, Joch and Doris, the last drink before one leaves. How do you do? He repeated to me something that sounded at the time like Cenestashu. How are you today? He gave as Cenestau Galair. The answer being Te brau, Cenestau Hin. It's fine, how's yourself? Time enough yet, he translated as Trair the Lewer and goodbye with Evi, apparently, in fact, good night. His knowledge doesn't go any further.
In Craignish, Marstrander met Harry Kelly, who was 77 years old. He is described as a nice old man with a clear pronunciation. The few sentences the professor gave him to translate, he managed without any difficulty. In Brada village, the professor found Thomas Crebin, who also was willing to speak Manx if Marstrander should come back to see him. On the Peel Road, he met William Keggin, who said that no one spoke Manx in the district. But Keggin sold Marstrander a Bible in Manx for 2 shillings.
He would have given it to me for nothing. It turned out to be in a very bad state. 19th of June. In Kirkmichael, one can say that Manx is completely dead. No one was able to name even a single old man around here who spoke it. Vicar Cannon here is supposed to be quite knowledgeable in the language, it's said. It is he who is to preach at St. John's on the 7th of July. But Cashin said that his Manx and his pronunciation appeared to be somewhat strange, and that he didn't understand what he said all the time. Cannon's father lives near Balaf in Alpine House. Kirkmichael lies a few hundred metres from the sea. The old harbour must have lain at the opening of Glen Willen, Merla Dalen, the Milldale, somewhat southwest from the built-up area. It's a place that can give shelter on this part of the coast. As a joke I Carl erected this stone on a gatepost whose flat, even surface was much too tempting. I hope that no one will find it and take it seriously. 22nd of June, Ramsey, Saddle Hotel. Left Ramsey yesterday around 2 p.m. Made for Douglas, which I reached just before 8 p.m, just in time to get my letters and papers at the post office. Stopped at Machill Church to have a look at the Celtic cross and the runic crosses, which are collected under a half roof in the churchyard. This collection is extremely interesting. A digger at the churchyard introduced me to Tom Looney, who's about 75 years old, as one who spoke Manx. He lives quite close to the churchyard. He was not at home when I came, but his brother's son said he'd only heard an odd word of Manx from him, so he can probably be erased from my list of Manx speakers. Booked into the British Hotel in Douglas, Today I bought a couple of old books, amongst others a Bible that was in bad condition and a Manx prayer book or something like it. But the beginning of the book was missing. I called on Neen, whom I met later on in the afternoon. He gave me his manuscript of his devotions in Manx, which is not obtainable any longer from the bookshops. Neen has a small sweet shop in Douglas. He sits in a small room at the back of the shop, which has to do as his dining room, and makes Manx rock. The man who ought to be a professor in Manx at a university. Life is very hard for some. 25th of June. Had my first lesson with Christian today. Manx is going to be a complicated study when it comes to phonetics. It's not possible at this stage to make detailed phonetic notes. I'll have to work my way into the language first and then check details later on when my ear is more attuned to it. The phonetic system is much different from Irish and I will have to orientate myself from scratch.
Marstrander continued to work with Christian 4 hours a day and was beginning to get a hang of the system. He also met other people who helped him with books and songs in Manx. In July, he attended Tynwald Day.
July 8th. Arrived too late at Tynwald on the 5th of July. The service had been held and the laws read when I arrived around midday. The national gathering at the nunnery was in many ways very interesting, but we didn't hear a word of Manx, with the exception of a telegram from the London branch of the World Manx Association, which the author read out. But it's rather significant that of the work that is going on to save whatever can be saved of the old traditions here on the island, only one speaker, Archdeacon Cooley from Andrus, said in a spirited speech that Manx should be brought back at least as a subject for studies, and asked and exhorted them all to hand over to the museum all old things of value. All the other speeches seem more about telling jokes and suggestive stories. It is here about the same as in Dublin. There is a lack of organisation. Everything seems to be going its own way.
Not only was it hard to find people who were willing to cooperate, but the professor knew all along that he was dealing with a dying language. But Marstrander took his task very seriously. After all, he was used to a challenge. They say that in Brittany he had lived with his family in a tent for 3 years in order to make notes of the dialects there. One night a pub manager there complained that he by fault had bought 600 bottles of red wine. People in Brittany only wanted to drink cider, so what was he supposed to do? He suggested that Marstrander bought all the bottles for half a franc. Marstrander agreed. He bought the bottles.
But from that moment on, there was no peace to be found in the tent. During the days, the peasants came. At night, the priests came. Who was drinking more? I don't know. But after a fortnight, the lot was gone, and I could finally work in peace. September 8th, we'll travel tomorrow morning to Douglas and afterwards on the 4:30 p.m. boat to Liverpool, Newcastle, Oslo, Bessheim. I'm quite satisfied with my stay here. The material I've collected will without doubt have significant value when Celtic speech has completely disappeared from the island in 5 to 10 years' time, even though the phonetic interpretations on several points are naturally only tentative. I have really got the hang of Manx, and I hope that when I return next year I can start on the Southern dialect, which in my opinion differs to a significantly greater degree than is generally thought from that in the northern part of the island. My plan for next summer is to investigate the Southern dialect and to excavate an old keel in a very Norse district, and perhaps find a few new runic crosses, hopefully I'll be able to get a little bit of financial help for this purpose from some fund in Norway. We ought to get Nien a grant for 2 years, so that he can continue recording the place names. This work has to be done within the next few years, because it would not be possible to obtain the Celtic pronunciation in a few years' time. For some of the places, a phonetic notation is probably now already impossible. Cubbon, Nien and Killia are excellent types and good friends. Had Killia to dinner last night in the Prince of Wales Hotel. Cubbon has got a whole pile of Manx literature for me and has furthermore been a great help to me. He also found an old missing piece of a runic stone from Derby, the Odin Stone, which completely refutes a certain Ferthur and proves that the readings I suggested in Revue Celtique some 10 to 15 years ago are correct. I think I have a good grip on the writing in the cross slab found earlier from Bride. My trip to Ireland will have to wait until next year. First of September 1930. My impression of Kelly is confirmed. He appears to be an excellent speaker, considering the position of Manx. I noted down his CV yesterday, which contained many interesting pieces of information about manners and customs in the old days, but he is a difficult man to handle. When I called in this morning at 9 o'clock, as we'd agreed, he had no time to spare. I'll have to come to a permanent arrangement with him. Called on Thomas Creben in Bradder Village today, and I'm going to meet him tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. He appears to have a clear pronunciation.
We have reached the year 1933 and Marstrander is returning to the island to do his phonographic recordings, but some difficult challenges are waiting for him.
When in London, I had a meeting with the general manager of the Gramophone Company. He was a helpful young man who gave me the impression of being very interested in the project. He promises to be available the moment I arrive in London with Harry Kelly. Brought with me part one of the phonographic recordings which Selma and Lai produced in America. Selma pointed out that there was something wrong with the stylus, and that this was a great handicap here. It's a pity, because at least a fifth of the wax cylinder cannot be used, and the whole thing could have been easily fixed by changing the stylus only. It has to be done, and as soon as I get back home. Apart from that, the recording apparatus is functioning well. I cannot use it when the temperature is less than 20 degrees, which is what Selma prefers. It's cold here and practically impossible to get the temperature up in the rooms. I tried to get in contact with Kelly on the 24th of January. Walked over the hill from Port Erin Station Hotel as in 1930 and started the recordings here in the hotel on the 25th. My impression is that the recordings are rather uneven. Kelly's voice is somewhat hoarse, is a bit squeaky and not very sonorous. But the result improves when he speaks relatively softly and has his mouth well close to the horn. Have worked with him for 4 days now. Will probably finish tomorrow morning, the 30th of January. Visited Quain yesterday. Recorded the Lord's Prayer. Some verses of a hymn, see Peel material, together with a couple of small sentences. Quain's voice didn't turn out to be very good either for the recordings, and his knowledge of Manx is probably rather limited. He's not like Kelly and Cashin, born with Manx, but has learned it, as he says himself, by listening to the old people when he was a boy. His pronunciation often varies for the same words, it seems to me.
Now, pattern, oh, the venom, the jigsaw.
5th of February, 1933. Recorded several cylinders in Peel with Quain and Cashin. 12 long cylinders from Liverpool came in handy. I have to mention that the 18-centimetre cylinders, which Selma mentions in his letter as quite useful, can't be cut, as they are cone-shaped. 3rd of February, 1933. To Sulby, where I used a couple of cylinders on Fail. He was an impossible subject, hoarse and had a squeaky voice, and barked the words into the horn, and his memory of Manx was rather limited. 4th of February 1933, to Jerby. John Kane confirmed completely the good impression I got of him in 1929. Used the two last cylinders on him. It's a pity I hadn't met him before. He would have been one of my main informants, together with Christian, Woodworth and Kelly.
Carl Marstrander took 60 rolls of phonographic records. All the speakers were in their 80s, and the professor said that within 5 years after his leaving, it would be impossible to study spoken Manx. He was very pessimistic in 1934 when he thought there was only one true native speaker left in the island. He was wrong. In 1946, Charles W. Locke visited the Isle of Man and presented a list of some 20 native speakers. Today, there are many more. Carl Marstrander died in 1965. His diary and his works on the Manx language was left to the Manx Museum.
You have been listening to a documentary about visits to the Isle of Man in the 1920s and 30s by the Norwegian professor Carl Marstrander. Marstrander was played by Dr. Brian Stoll. The documentary was produced and presented by Rondi Lundi and contained material from the Manx Museum archives.